Ready, set, go!
This is the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. Tune into our weekly radio show. For more information, go to checkpointradio.com. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to the Checkpoint Podcast on the Westwood One Podcast Network. Everyone's listening. Exclusive, uncensored, and extended conversations from the nationally syndicated crew of the Checkpoint Radio Show. My name's Nate Bender. I'm joined by the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis.
What up?
Norris Howard.
Yo.
And over at the Checkpoint News Desk, Joe Sloan.
Psyched to be here.
So, we've challenged our listeners to leave us 60 reviews in 365 days.
It seems
like a fairly reasonable challenge. Well, since last week, we have gotten no new reviews.
Boo. What's wrong with y'all?
That's okay, though, because we've got a backlog of reviews to read, so we're going to read a couple of them. But I do want to remind you guys to help us get above 60 reviews, and believe me, I know way more than 60 people listen to the show. We see the download numbers each and every single week. Let us know.
We know.
Yeah, let us know how we're doing by going over to our iTunes feed. You can find that by going to iTunes and searching Checkpoint Radio and dropping us a rating and a review.
We're talking to you, Jim.
Yeah.
Come on, man. What are you even waiting for?
There's got to be a guy named Jim out there.
Who's theoretically. 100% a guy named Jim.
Anyway, so let's check out some of these reviews.
All right, so this first one comes from What Up. It's What Up Doe by Herp-a-derp-derpy-hooves.
Okay.
All right. Says, stumbled on this radio show trying to listen to something else entirely on the TuneIn Radio app, and upon realizing I found a video game radio show, I knew I had found a new favorite station. Well, my native state, North Jersey, anything past the turnpike is Bama, by the way. South Jersey might as well be Mississippi.
Okay.
I'm happy to hear that there is a podcast I can tune into while I'm at my night job. Anyway, it lit. Fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji.
Thank you very much. Herpa Derpy Hooves.
So a brony.
Yeah. Thank you for the review.
Appreciate it.
We are not we don't have a presence in Jersey.
No, not yet.
Unfortunately.
But South Alabama.
But the good news is that if you want to check out full episodes of Checkpoint Radio, you can do that by either visiting our website over at checkpointradio.com or subscribing at mixcloud.com/checkpointradio.
Yep.
By the way, just a side note for today, if you hear any explosions in the background,
it is the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Yes.
So while we were able to get through the show before evening set in, it is starting to become evening and people are want to blow things up on this particular day.
I know there's a lot of preconceived notions about Detroit, and I will let you know that those sounds are not what you think they are.
Yeah. See, here's the thing is
but
that
some of them might. So the quicker we can get done,
exactly,
the quicker we can get out of here.
Exactly. So we're trying to get out of here at a decent hour so that we can still, you know, go to barbecues and family events. But we never stop working, whether it is the 4th of July or Christmas. We're generally here doing a show each and every single Wednesday. And if you want to watch us do that show live, chime in, have some input on what we're talking about, you can do that by following us at twitch.tv/checkpointradio.
I will say this to Streamer Stores, who I know is coming to us all the way from the UK. He's in the chat today.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't have to worry about any excessive swearing or anything. Yeah, that would probably be the real show and not the podcast.
That is the radio program.
That's the radio program.
Yes, there is a bit of a distinction between the two products.
We do tend to cuss on this one.
Yeah, on the podcast, it can get a little blue every once in a while.
I had a guy in the stream a few days ago who was like, no cussing, please. And I'm like, you came to the wrong place.
This is the wrong place.
He's like, oh, okay, a little cussing then. I'm like, thanks. Thank you.
Okay, a little cussing.
All right, let's check out this second review from Peridot Road.
Oh, yeah. So we got What Up Doe from Peridot Road. Been with these guys since the relaunch of their other show, Limit Break Radio. Love these guys. Big fan of... Who the fuck is Daddy?
That would be me.
That would be Nate. I'm not feeling this review already.
Who do you want to guess is the one who calls him Daddy?
Oh, Juxta.
Yeah, yeah,
it's Chris.
It's
Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It helps me sleep at night. Okay.
I don't like the tone of your voice.
On a serious note, I am not in a location that can hear me, that I can hear the main show, but I do download and listen to all the podcast shows, and it does improve my long commute at least a couple times a week. To the crew, keep up the good work, and I'll keep supporting you guys by the sidelines by donating to Patreon.
Appreciate
it. If I got AIDS, I would want it to come from you guys. One of my favorite drops of all time.
Context is required from that.
For that joke, yeah.
Context.
I don't think we even have the... Do we even have the drop on hand?
No, we don't use it for this show.
Of course not.
No, we don't.
So, I mean, a couple of things about that. First of all, I don't know where you are, but you can hear the main show.
That's right.
All you got to do is go to checkpointradio.com.
Or mixcloud.com/checkpointradio.
I mean,
granted, it is a week after we do the show.
Sure.
You can also... you can check out segments of the show on YouTube, youtube.com/checkpointradio. And of course, you can also watch the VODs of this. We don't make any of those private. So
yeah.
You can go back and watch
those. Or you can tune in on Wednesday and listen.
That too. Yeah, as it happens. Anyway, so that was awkward and difficult to explain the end of that. But we have a drop that just says AIDS every once in a while.
We do.
Yeah. It's pretty stupid.
It's surprising how much use it gets.
It's from Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it does get a lot of use.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well, because of the game we play.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, all right. So let's talk about our podcast topic this week.
AIDS.
Not AIDS. Okay. An article from VG247.com. states white supremacists use Fortnite and Minecraft as recruiting tools.
Well, man. I mean, first of all, anyone who's ever played Xbox Live absolutely will believe this article.
Well, 100%.
Well,
including me.
The evidence is definitely there to suggest that, there's a definite preponderance of racist behavior that penetrates a lot of online communities and specifically online games. But this isn't just anecdotal evidence of like, listen to how many people say the N-word when you get on Xbox Live.
True.
This actually comes to us from Christian Piccolini, who is a former white supremacist leader who recently hosted a AMA on Reddit.
That's got to be, by the way, a very difficult thing to have in your lower third.
Right.
Former white supremacist leader.
That's got to be tough to have there.
Not something that you want to put on your CV, right?
You're correct.
So Piccolini recently hosted a AMA on Reddit via Kama Sutra and Risteria talking about his experiences with groups like the Hammerskin Nation, and noticed in recent years, multiplayer gaming has become a prime recruitment pool alongside, and get this, mental health forums. Ugh.
That is disgusting. it's a whole new level of reprehensible, because it's two of really the most mentally vulnerable groups that we have in all of society, right?
It's not often you get to take white supremacy and say, "Wow, that's irreprehensible."
No,
now that's even worse.
But it's double and triple worse, because it's going to try to recruit the most vulnerable people, the most impressionable people, people with mental health issues, and then you have ostensibly, because Fortnite is involved, you're gonna have a lot of children involved as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you have
Minecraft too.
Minecraft as well.
Yeah.
So you're talking about two of the biggest games with gamers under 18, probably in the past decade.
Next, we're going to hear Roblox is in there.
I wouldn't be surprised if it is. But that's part of the... I mean, even at my day job, man, we have to buy a new server because we need a closed network so people can't go in when these kids are trying to, you know, do a group project on Minecraft and spew out a whole bunch of racist shit.
Right.
Like, you know, or try to recruit them because they don't know into like a white supremacist group. It's absolutely absurd, but it is not surprising in the least.
And absurd, yes, that is exactly what it is. But you're absolutely right. I'm not
surprised to hear this at all. And, you know, I've talked about it in the past here on this show and in other shows. I used to be involved with the local music scene. I was in a punk band for years and years and years. And we had the same problem where, you know, skinheads, white supremacists would use punk and metal because these were kids who were kind of ostracized by their peers.
The disaffected youth.
Yeah. Sort of brand. And and the thing is that, you know, they would show up to shows and they would be incredibly disruptive.
By the way, that shit still goes on today the time. My brother was big into like the screamo stuff and like that. It is so awful.
Oh yeah. And you know, different places have different approaches to how they handle that kind of stuff, right? Like, you know, you may be at a venue one week where there's a great show that's booked and the venue doesn't do anything about them. Mm-hmm. So you have to deal with them. And what inevitably ends up happening every single time is they get super drunk, they get super violent, and either end up starting a direct fight or they start going after and singling people out in menacing people. And it became a real problem in the punk rock community. And the way that we reacted to it is we stopped booking at places that wouldn't throw these motherfuckers out. We would only play places that would say, you're not welcome here, you gotta go. Your fucking bullshit has gotta go. And not wait till the bullshit started, but proactively not even let them in the fucking door.
And we talked about this a lot in pre-show, and I just want to preface this, okay? Because here's the rhetoric that's gonna happen, right? A lot of times when people hear exactly what you've just said is basically, hey, when confronted with white supremacists, we get them the hell out. They're not welcome here. They're not allowed here,
and,
right?
And the other dude, there was a number of tactics that we used to deal with these guys.
Here's the stupid ass pushback.
But I get where you're going. Mm-hmm. But those tactics included fighting them, starting fights with them until they got kicked out, or we both got kicked out.
Right.
And going so far as to figure out, and I'm glad that the statute of limitations has expired on a lot of this, but figuring out where the collective homes were, because they had like squats and white supremacist nationalist
like
houses. Figuring out where those were and going and fucking with them openly. You know, we would toss Molotov cocktails on their lawn and make them come out and put out the flames, and we would laugh at them. And the thing is that I still to this day do not feel bad about any of this shit. And I know exactly, Norris, where you were going. The pushback on that is well, if you're responding with violence and you're responding with menacing and you're responding with this and that, aren't you just using the same exact tactics that they want to use?
Here's the problem with that. Is that usually when you're talking about white supremacists, they're menacing people of different races and creeds. They're
right.
Menacing people of different sexual orientations.
Right.
You can't choose to be black or white or gay or whatever. You can't choose that.
You can choose
to not be a racist dickhead.
Exactly.
You can choose that.
You can choose whether or not to be a hard nationalist, a white nationalist, a Nazi. You can choose whether or not to be a part of these things because it's an ideology.
Hey, right. As evidenced by the lower third of former white supremacist leader. Yeah.
Exactly.
But that's what I mean, and that's part of the rhetoric and the pushback that I think is stupid, because when people say, oh my God, this is just what I believe and this is how I feel and you're menacing me about this. This is no different than if you were menacing somebody of a different religion.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot different. It's a hell of a lot different. Yeah.
And, you know, hearing about stuff like this and hearing about exactly where they're recruiting, it makes perfect sense why their numbers have not dwindled, even though we're supposed to be a more quote unquote
enlightened,
tolerant society now.
Yeah.
There's a reason why it continues to proliferate, because they're going after communities that are either one, already marginalized, or people who are already impressionable. That is a very specific, very strategic, and 100% effective type of strategy.
Well, in our nation right now, compounded by the fact that there's, you know, decreasing funds that are going towards mental health, and the fact that mental health isn't, you know, understood in the greater culture and whatnot, there's not a whole lot of other places they can
turn
to.
But I mean, think about the litany of mental illnesses that are talked about on these forums, right? And if you have somebody who's suffering from severe depression, somebody who's suffering from, you know, any of these issues, and really just want somebody to empathize with them, right? It's very easy for that empathy to turn into idolatry, if you will.
Sure.
Turn into following someone and what they believe in.
Right.
That is that energy gets transferred so quickly, and we see it with social movements all the time.
I think back to being in high school and in my earlier days of starting to struggle with like gender and a lot of self-worth issues that arose out of that.
Sure.
When I could find something, like, instead of, like, you know, looking at myself and saying, what is different about me? What am I struggling with? What am I dealing with? If I could turn my attention on disliking something else and blaming something else, ooh, that was a way easier path to follow than having to be self-reflective and look inwards for, you know, the things that I was struggling with.
Absolutely.
And yeah, if someone at that time had been able to, you know, get a hold of me and say, give me a real, real easy scapegoat for some of the problems that were going on in my life.
Oh,
man,
yeah.
That's the prime age
because
to do
you,
it.
Because in high school you were licking frogs and they were making the frogs gay. and thus, I forgot about the gay frogs. Like, that's what I'm saying.
I shouldn't have licked so many frogs.
Exactly.
Or eating so many chicken nuggets.
Or see, the chicken nuggets. The chicken nuggets making everybody gay. But that's what I'm saying, is that you have all of these, Joe, and you hit the nail on the head. It's much easier for somebody to look externally and say, that's why I have
problems.
That's
my problem, yeah.
Exactly.
Totally. It's anytime you can give someone a real easy scapegoat for the problems in their life, they're probably going to take it.
So let me put this out here to you guys. In what other scenario outside of online gaming are you forced to talk to someone in a social environment for the better part of, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes to an hour, you know, depending on what game you're playing, and you have no idea what walk of life this person comes from. You have no idea what their, their morality is, what their ideals are, and now you're put in a position where you're very intimately having to communicate with them over voice chat, right? Like, How many different situations can we say we have a completely unfiltered access to other people? It's really only in gaming.
It's really only in gaming.
You don't get that really in social media, because you build up your social media through people that you know or that you want to.
It's a bunch of echo chambers.
You're right. And it builds a bunch of echo chambers, and it builds a bunch of bubbles.
Now, I will say this. The only thing analogous, at least in my experience, that I've had was being in college, where you are forced to in person confront people of different walks of life and ideas.
We probably say school.
Streamer stores in the chat was the one who said
that's
school.
That's the only time.
Robbie and I will give you another one. Retail.
Well, hang on.
That's different, because that's already
different.
Adversarial.
And you have a mandate to uphold a certain standard of conduct.
Right.
Nobody an online gaming environment, nobody has a standard of conduct.
True.
And I think that school is not exactly a great analogy, because there's always divisions. You don't have school that goes all the way from kindergarten through 12th grade anymore. You now have kindergarten through, you know, six through eight, whatever the division is. You know what
Something
I mean?
Something else to also keep in mind, too, is theoretically in school or in retail, there should also be, again, theoretically, in most cases, you would hope, something in place that if it starts to get as out of hand
oversight.
As it can. Yeah,
there's
go,
rules
oversight.
And oversight you know, ridicule and all that type of stuff. There's no immediate physical threat in the online or gaming space.
Yeah.
If somebody comes in and starts saying some real homophobic stuff to you, Joe,
they're going to kick them out before long.
Beyond just kicking them out, they don't know you. They don't know, if I say some wild shit, this dude might just haul off and sock me, right?
That's
same
true.
Thing with school. We don't really know. We assume that everybody is sane, and we assume everybody can have a mature discussion. But I've seen discussions turn into fist fights in school.
Well, and I'd like to say that's in actual actual person, as you know, Nate mentioned earlier, you know, at these concerts and whatnot, at least in real life, you have that recourse as well.
But if you're looking at online games as an opportunity for recruitment, you're not looking at, oh, well, what if I offend somebody?
What's the downside? You're not thinking about that.
You don't give a shit about friends. Right. You're not there to make friends. You're there to make a quota. You're there to pick up people for your movement. So all you got to do is say some horrible shit down the line, and you get a young kid that's laughing at it.
Who goes, ha, 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 yeah, man, you got a point.
Bingo.
You got him.
You got him.
In the worst case scenario, you get yourself muted, in which case you weren't going to get that person anyway.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Now, here's the thing, everybody kicks you.
And this is why this is worth talking about, because it's not just a recruitment tool. It's probably one of the most effective recruitment tools that I could think of.
And so now I pose the question of, we just put this out there, we've talked about it, we kind of all have a framework and an understanding that this type of shit occurs. The question now is, what the fuck are we going to do about it?
What do you do about it?
What can we do about it? Like you and Joe said, we mute them, but what does that actually do about the problem?
You kick them. You flag them. You
flag. Okay, sure. Yeah. But here's the thing. Even if we keep flagging them, unless the company or developer or whoever's umbrella it's happening under does something about it,
does something actively,
is that actually going to do anything?
And here's the thing. Not only do they need to do something about it, but they're also, you get back to this conversation of, is context important? You know, are people just reporting because, oh, I'm pissed I lost, I'm going to report someone for doing something terrible? They need to actually be able to examine all those situations. And that's super time consuming.
It is.
And
it is.
Resource intensive.
It is super time consuming, but we're not talking about those instances. We're talking about people openly recruiting for white supremacist groups.
Kind of a different thing.
That's a different thing. That's not something that is subject to a lot of context, right?
That's true. But Norris, if us as players don't get far enough to realize that it's recruitment for these groups, right? We hear them spew off a slur here or there. What do? We mute them. Mm. We don't even know that it's getting that far. How do we know which ones we're actually supposed to be reporting
for this? It
gets
that far with someone, because
people are probably impressionable enough to join.
But there are people who that type of talk, it does not faze them. They may not be racist, but it doesn't faze them.
They've grown up with that. They choose to
fight against it or engage in whatever.
No,
in some
they
way.
Just completely could. They're just
tune
neutral. They just tune it out.
Yeah,
right?
It's just background noise to them.
The silent fucking majority, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's who needs to speak up, because people hear, you know, us four in the room and other people who are very well versed in this type of stuff and understand it, yeah, they're going to be the ones to flag everybody and mute people and whatnot. But it's going to take the people who sit in those rooms with those people and hear that type of rhetoric that goes, all right, bro, you've taken this way beyond a joke. You've taken this way beyond the realm of humor. You've taken this well beyond the realm of even making logical sense.
But I mean, yeah, but they're recruiting for white supremacy. They don't give a shit what you think.
Right. Well, and at the same time, we're dealing a lot with voice chats where there is basically no log.
How do you monitor that?
Yeah. How do you monitor that when it was
in Discord, right? Because there's chat logs. They can find that stuff out. But yeah, when it comes to voice chat programs like Xbox Live or on PlayStation or even in-game voice chat
inside of PUBG
or League of Legends.
It is a slippery slope, and I would never want to advocate for game companies or anybody that have the ability to go back and listen to people's voice chat. I think that is a slippery slope, and that's a little too much. That's why I said the onus has to be on the gamers, because the companies, Joe, you're right, it's too time consuming, it's going to cost too much money, it's going to require a whole infrastructure onto itself. Yes.
Yeah, but this is the same fucking community that waged Gamergate, okay? Do you really think that the same people who looked at Gamergate and went, "Oh yeah, that's definitely only about game journalism and nothing else." You really think that those same people are going to be able to reject fascism?
Of course not, because we're talking about the same people who are listening to these white supremacist chats. That's why I'm saying it has to be down to those people who have not said anything.
Well,
before.
But now you're an SJW. You just can't take a joke, okay, SJW.
Well, hold on.
I don't give a fuck about you calling me a SJW. You're flagging you out of here.
But what does flagging them even to the companies do?
right? Like, if the company doesn't take action after you flag them and they're still able to spew their nonsense everywhere, what does it actually do?
And we're talking about the silent majority. They're the silent majority for a reason. Why would they suddenly speak up?
Yeah.
Dude, because it's the simple fact is the moment that it continues to spin out of control. We talked about Gamergate, and the reason why Gamergate even got as big as it did is because too many people who actually have platforms and voices didn't say shit about it. They let this whole undercurrent of Gamergate fester, the whole undercurrent of, you know, anti-gay, anti-woman, anti-minority, all that shit, they allowed it to fester. And when people finally decided to stand up and speak out about it, it was too little too late. And that was really parallel to what was happening in the entire country, to be honest.
I mean, well,
it's not just
I, I think it was actually a bellwether to what was happening in the entire country.
I mean, how often was
the
that attitude
in
of
a coal mine?
Yeah, how often was that attitude of take that shit back to the internet?
Yeah.
Pervasive. Like, if it happened in mainstream, like, no, but that's what you get. Like,
but that's what happened.
Spew that garbage on the internet where it belongs. And now we're seeing the other half of that. I was like, all right, well, the garbage.
Well, but who does anyone even differentiate between the internet and real life anymore? I was thinking
anymore, but when that attitude was pervasive,
true.
There was a very big divide still.
That is true. I mean, it has been much more recent where, you know, we just kind of have to admit that there's not this internet culture and pop culture that
it's
just
thing.
The same thing.
It's the same thing.
Especially when you've got companies like, I don't even remember, who's that stupid company that does the fucking meme commercial that I can't stand?
Comcast.
Is that Comcast?
Yes.
Comcast.
Sure
it is Comcast. God, I hate Comcast.
Man.
But when large corporations are co-opting things like memes, then you have to say, okay, there is no more divide between internet culture and regular
just
culture.
Just like stuff like influencer marketing shows that the cultures are one in the same because you have people from the internet, quote unquote, who directly, you know, have a say in modern consumerism, if you will. So, I mean, the cultures are the same. But I think in Streamer Stores and Lloyd are going back and forth in the chat right now. And they're saying the biggest thing is the bottom line, right, to these companies. They don't really care that much about the community as long as the community is still participating and buying their product.
That's fair.
Here's the problem is that if it gets to a point to where your community is so toxic that people no longer want to buy your product or no longer have faith in your product, I think that there's a tangible disadvantage to not addressing something like that.
Well, and again, this what's interesting about this article too is it's not just mentioning games in general, although I definitely believe that it happens all over the place, not just in these specific games, but there are specific ones that are being called out. So the fact that we know it's specifically Minecraft, Fortnite, is there some way to target these areas or should these companies take it upon themselves?
I mean, all it takes is this.
Someone like Blizzard, right? They actually make an effort to fight toxicity.
All it takes is for Fortnite to make it to NBC Nightly News with a report that says white supremacists are recruiting on Fortnite and there will be a fucking fire in middle America.
No, I don't think that that's true.
I think it would.
No, I don't think that that's true. If you took white supremacist and replaced it with ISIS, then there would be a firestorm.
You know what?
Then there would be a real problem because then soccer moms would demand something be done.
You're not wrong.
You know what it is?
You're not wrong.
Like, that's the sad part. Again, when we talk, like, and this has been so fucking obscured between 2017 and 2018 that I can't believe that I have to say this. When we talk about white supremacists, we're talking about a fucking prison gang. We're talking about the Aryan Nation. We're talking about hammer skins. This is fucked up bullshit. This has been the seedy underbelly of shit that I've had to deal with for nigh on 2 decades. And it's been going on for longer than that. But the crazy thing is how normalized it's become. Because again, a soccer mom in 2018 hears white supremacists on Fortnite, they're going to go, yeah, my kid's never going to run into that, or they're going to know better, not really understanding that this is the same level of indoctrination that ISIS would use when they were using social media to try to use it as a recruitment tool.
On that point, yes, I think you're absolutely right. But I still think that there would be enough noise to cause a noticeable current in the community of Fortnite to the point to where Epic would have to do something to address it. Now, to your point of saying if it was ISIS, the fucking game might get shut down. Like, honestly, because we already know of all the racial elements involved in that, too.
Except that happened. Those stories happened. And I remember them happening through the PlayStation 2 and 3. It was actually probably the PlayStation 3 era. But that, you know, you would get these stories that floated around in these, you know, mainstream media circles, mm-hmm. AP, Reuters.
Yeah.
And they would be like, you know, ISIS is using PSN to recruit.
Right.
Disenfranchised
but again,
youth.
But how many times, right, outside of maybe Mario and Call of Duty, when's the last time a game was this much in the zeitgeist as Fortnite is right
now?
It's
been a long time.
It has been a while. It has been a long time.
And so I think if you attach those two and you conflate those two, knowing that so many people understand, know, and play Fortnite, yeah, I think that there would be movement. I'm not saying would be effective.
Even on Epic's side, that sort of imagery with your brand isn't something they want. I think whether or not the market actually started to be affected by it, Epic would still try and get ahead of that as quick as they can and would jump on even putting out some type of optics that they're doing something about it.
But back to the original question of, you know, what is this even? Is this something even we can affect or do something on? I'm not sure there is a real good solution with things as they are right now. Until social media and gaming becomes less obscured and less anonymous, you're not going to see any meaningful change. As long as people can, as you said, just hide behind a computer screen or a fake account, it doesn't matter.
Even if they got banned, they just create a new account.
I think back to Bumble, right? This was a dating app that forced you to link your Facebook. Now, there are some fake Facebook accounts, of course, but as far as social media goes,
I mean, Facebook does kind of go out of their way to really verify
to
you
make
are
sure
who
you are.
Who
it
you
does. Are.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot less shitty people on Bumble
shady people, yeah.
Because you have to tie your Facebook to that and they can see it.
That's true.
So when we get to a point, and I'm not saying that like this is something that'll be forced on people. I think that eventually people will voluntarily go to this. A game that says, no, you have to register your ID to play.
Hmm.
And I think at some point you will see people voluntarily
games,
go like, absolutely.
I think definitely for mature rated games in more quote unquote adult themed games. Yeah,
when the day comes, that's possible. Yeah, when the day comes, you can be held accountable for the shit that you do and say. Then you will see meaningful change. Then you will see people start standing
up. It's going to take the first person to get caught and prosecuted for hate speech online.
Ooh.
That's what it's going
to
take.
Man, you know what someone's going to have to do to make a solid of enough case to be able to prosecute that?
Oh, encourage someone to get murdered and they get murdered.
And they get murdered.
It's going to cost a life.
It is. He's not wrong.
That's
He's
what it's going to cost to
it's,
fix
and
it.
And it's going to have all, it's going to have the cocktail of elements.
Yeah, but between shit like Blue Whale and, you know, like, chick who sent text to her boyfriend telling him to kill himself until he did, you know, like, it doesn't seem like we even need games to even litigate this. Like, this kind of shit is already happening.
There's precedent.
Right.
There's precedent for this, which is why I said that's what it's going to take. It's going to take for somebody to be playing Fortnite or whatever other game and say something and somebody does it and they will be held liable because they were there spewing out and somebody's going to clip it and it's going to be shared and it's going to be viral. And that's the point that I'm saying.
But even with something, because I mean, we've had something sort of similar to that with the swatting incident where people still aren't really sure how or
that
why
case
to
is still,
prosecute
But that case
people.
Is still
exactly.
open.
So something similar that has happened and we're still not really sure what to do with it.
Yeah, that big public outcry or that big kind of like come to Jesus moment hasn't happened in the gaming community. And there have been more than enough examples and more than enough catalysts to be able to make that happen.
I don't disagree with you, but we haven't had a come to Jesus moment on guns right now, and kids are being shot up.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, if we're... I'm not saying expect the come to Jesus moment.
I'm saying that's what it takes, though.
That's what it's going to take to even move the needle whatsoever.
You don't think that a technology company being proactive about toxic behavior could be... You know, could get out in front of this.
Google maybe, but that nobody else has the resources to do it. That's the problem.
I'm saying there's a possibility, but I'm saying there's also going to be a lot of people on the other side of that where they're like, when you start getting like super proactive out and ahead of this, there's gonna be a whole lot of like you're gonna get those context arguments left and right.
That's true.
And there's no money in doing this for anyone.
That is also true.
Depressing. Man, that happy 4th of July, everybody.
That is also true. There really isn't a good profit motive to
drive. Yeah, so, I mean, you've got to come up with new technology.
That.
You have to fight against the people who are like, you're invading my privacy, and this isn't right.
But I can, but
and you're getting nothing
you
out
now,
of it.
But I can tell you now is that if they do something like that, and they still have all the other accoutrements of a console or of a gaming environment, that marginalized groups and people of color and all that type of stuff, they might gravitate towards something like that and say, you know what, this is something that I think is a move in the right direction.
You maybe could get a hero of the LGBT community sort of,
or women,
moniker,
or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? Especially women, because they're the biggest demographic of them all, right? You get something that says, you know what, like Bumble, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, women, I know you're very concerned about safety. You're very concerned about privacy. You're concerned about these
things.
This
puts the onus on you.
This puts the onus upon you.
Yeah.
And we've put these type of, I don't want to say fail safes, but systems in place to make things easier for that. I think if a console does something like that, that they might actually see a noticeable uptick.
I mean, in a way, that is what Nintendo has been pretty dedicated
with the family
towards.
Friendly.
You know, I can't remember where I saw this, but I think it was a tweet. Somebody had said, you know, the amount of protections that Nintendo puts in place between a kid and hearing the N-word is actually really respectable. And I kind of agree with that. Mm-hmm. You know, for as cumbersome as their systems can be, they are designed to inherently protect children. And I do think that this is a big part of the discussion when we talk about things like white supremacist recruiting over video games, because, you know, as adults, we hope that most people can hear that kind of stuff and kind of, you know, their bullshit detector would go off.
Yeah.
But it's kids that you really kind of worry about.
They don't
this
always,
with.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I do think that there needs to be some kind of proactive industry solution for this. And you're right, there isn't a very good profit motive, but this is a problem that has been around forever. We've heard about Sony and Microsoft trying to moderate their own platforms, their own voice chat platforms, and straight up, this is a task that becomes very, very difficult. And now that, you know, games are starting to implement the feature separately as a part of the software, the onus, I think, then falls on to the game developer or the developer of the technology to be able to figure out the tools to moderate it.
And you are seeing more of the games adopt the methodology. You know, the more you get flagged by people or marked by people, it starts grouping you with other people of similar, you know, respectability.
We've heard a lot, that they kind of gamify your reputation in that regard, and also kind of allow you to dig yourself out of a hole if given enough time and good behavior.
So
I think both of those things are necessary aspects to the system, as well as a strong appeal system. But, you know, I think that something like this, as gaming continues to grow and we see a wider cross-section of a demographic that exists on gaming, that this is going to be necessary. Because if you're grouping people up by the hundreds to be able to pair them on maps, there's a good chance that you've got everyone from a seventh grader to someone who's retired in that drop plane.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so the onus has got to be, I think, on the developer, the people making the product and making the money to be able to solve this problem. That's my opinion on it, at least. But listen, I don't know. What do you think? We want to hear from you. Checkpointradio.com. You can connect with us. Check PT Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Let us know if this is a conversation that you have found particularly interesting. Then make sure you connect with us and let us know how you feel. We may even read your responses next week on the show. All right. Let's check out what we were talking about this week on the radio show, starting off with the OWL Grand Finals preview. And we did just find out this week that Norris and Robbie are both going to be in attendance for the OWL Grand Finals.
Now, something I need to ask in this segment, which we normally do with something like this, is kind of go around the room and, like, you know, predict who you guys think or want to win.
That's
specifically
a good question.
Specifically for Nate and Joe here. Who are you guys pulling for?
I'm going to be... My support has been thrown completely behind Boston.
Yeah, it's been the uprising pretty much all along
for
you.
Yeah, and especially because they're coming into OWL Grand Finals as a bit of an underdog. I think that makes me want to see them succeed even more.
They did just barely eke in there.
But the thing is, though, is... And again, I really have to, you know, the fuel didn't make it in. Mickey is now my new favorite human being.
Yeah, he's great.
So I can't root. I can't root for the fuel, and there's no Midwest team for me to root for. OWL Blizzard, come on, get on
it
that
together.
We and without Midwest representation, it really leaves me with kind of this gut decision. You're right. The Uprising barely eked into the finals.
Well, but everyone who is 3-6 barely eked in.
Yeah, fair. I mean, just the margin. The margin by which they got in is very, very small compared to the upper echelon of the league. But again, being the underdog, and also my band shared a name with the Boston Uprising. So that's my team. That's who I'm rooting for.
How come you don't refer to it as your former band? Are you guys still together?
No.
So it's a former band?
The artist formerly known as the Uprising?
I mean, if you want to make everyone really sad, one of our members died as we were going to E3, so.
Oh, I was going to say another one? Because
he told you this story, Robbie.
Yeah, I know.
Nice job.
So, Joe, what about you?
So, you know, a lot like Nate, without a Midwest team or a home team to kind of root for, it is just kind of, you know, who do I like best?
Right.
And I decided it when the logos came out. I liked the Los Angeles Valiant.
Oh, okay.
I thought their logo was the coolest of the ones that we saw.
Going with one of the easy picks then, huh?
I mean, they're great. Yep.
The only easy pick is NYXL.
Norris.
Yeah, Norris, who you
I got a ride with the Valiant. Yeah. I actually just realized their colors are the same colors as my alma mater.
Oh, nice.
Wayne State University.
Oh, okay.
So I subconsciously picked that team.
Gotcha.
I fully put my support, like when it comes down to being realistic about it, I honestly think that the Valiant are going to pull it out. But if I could make a pick, like who I would love to see really come out and make a great showing, because after all they've been through, and especially with their rise since Fisher joined them, I think that the Gladiators coming up against NYXL and then going on to a final Battle of LA and potentially taking it would be one of the coolest narratives
that would
ever
be conceived. That would be really cool.
Yeah,
you
know what?
Could you imagine how shitty New York would feel
if
there's an all LA grand finals in New York?
I know.
They own it in LA. They own it in New York. Man.
Seriously. Though, I have to note that none of us picked the New York XL. That's weird. That's wild. I mean,
here's the thing. We aren't from New York, so like everywhere else in this country,
just
we
like
hate
nobody
New York.
Wants to pick the fucking Yankees.
I don't want to pick the Yankees. Fair. I don't want the Giants to ever win a game.
Here's the thing.
I don't have to worry about the Jets ever winning a game. They suck.
Kevin.
If Excelsior wins, what we're all gonna do? We're gonna be like, all right, yeah, figured.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's what everyone thought was gonna happen.
Par for the course.
So the smart
SKT won again.
So the smart money is on New York.
New York. Yeah. Okay.
The safe money.
I think the Valiant are really good, but yeah, I think we're gonna be reminded that the NYXL are. They're there for a reason.
Fair enough.
Or reminded that they too are mortals.
That was our first segment this week. We're also talking about the CEO Daytona event that happened with New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Kazunoko wrecked shit.
How dare someone come on the scene like that and defeat Sonic Fox? How dare he?
He's Kazunoko, man. He's anime games god, bro.
Now Sonic Fox and Goichi have to like team up and like train with each other.
Oh, dude, I'm so excited!
Like Vegeta joining the rest of the Z crew. Yeah,
dude, because like everybody worth it was in that top eight. Kazunoko, Dogura, Goichi, Hook Gang God, Sonic Fox. Everybody who you cared about
was
in
there.
DBZ was there in that top eight.
It's really interesting how quickly the scene around competitive Dragon Ball Z
has turned into Dragon Ball Z.
It kind of does. But
Who's the Krillin? Yeah. If you had to name someone.
I mean, until recently, it was Sonic Fox.
Was it? Oh. Nah, he was the Vegeta. Sonic Fox and Goichi
Vegeta
are the
wins
Goku
a fight every now and then.
Yeah, and Sonic Fox won at Combo Breaker.
Yeah, well, I mean, before that, though, that's what I was saying.
He was still Vegeta because Vegeta didn't beat him until he became
major
Vegeta.
He's second fiddle. Vegeta's strong, but he's always playing second fiddle.
Don't tell me about this DBZ shit.
God damn.
Dude, you're talking about one of my favorite shows of all time.
Oh, man.
Who's Gotenks?
Shut the fuck up.
Who's Majin Buu?
Majin Buu.
Kazunoko.
Anyway, so but it is really cool to see how quickly that scene is really starting to pan out. And also the New Japan Pro Wrestling aspect of it.
After an hour delay, it did get going, and it was very awesome, as pretty much any NJPW event is.
Did Kenny Omega win his match or no?
He didn't have a match.
He didn't have a match? He was just out there?
He was just hanging out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just chilling. I thought he'd be wrestling for sure.
No.
That's too bad.
I thought he was in a tag match.
Yeah, I thought he was too. Then.
I know I didn't see the whole thing.
He was in the tag match against Japanese player one and Japanese player two.
Ooh,
to be offensive, I that do apologize.
Thank you, Giraffe Lady.
Jeez.
The Golden Boys, right?
All right. Well, interesting stuff. If you want to check it out, there are videos out there on YouTube and Twitch. Again, that's the CEO Fighting Game Championship in Daytona Beach, Florida. And again, a huge shout out to Alex Jabaley for hanging out with us on the show and giving us kind of a preview and a rundown of that event. It was exciting to see it all kind of come together and actually to see him get in the ring. That was also interesting. We also play Place That Chiptune, and I'm curious, guys, if there was anything in there that you thought was a little bit unfair.
But just a quick correction: Golden Lovers, not Golden Boys. It's Kota Ibushi and and Kenny Omega.
Gotcha.
So do we think any of those weren't fair?
Yeah, like any of them that didn't meet the criteria?
They all felt like they belonged to an older game.
Because, I mean, there was that one. I know what you're saying. There was that one that technically just had chiptune elements.
Yeah.
And wasn't really a chiptune. No, it's fine. Okay. I don't mind. Gucci's been doing that for a decade.
Yeah, no. But, I mean, like, I thought some of your guys' insights on that was really interesting. That's a fun game to play.
I love that game,
It really is. I mean, I had, like, 9 different songs picked out for that.
Yeah, we had, like, 4 more we could have done.
There was definitely more that we could have done.
Yeah.
But I always love that bit. And then we wrap up our first hour talking about the HyperX sponsorship of Juju Smith-Schuster, the Pittsburgh Steelers player. This is a pretty big deal because, I think my main concern on this is that there's going to start being a rash of sponsorships that would otherwise kind of have to go to gamers because it's, something gaming specific.
Would it have to go to a gamer, or would it just not happen?
Well, I don't know, because like HyperX has got a, they've got a promotional budget to throw around, right?
They do, but they could also throw that towards sponsoring a tournament.
They could. That's true.
Buying a commercial.
But I mean, like, if trying to go out and secure sponsorship from, say, Alienware Dell, right? If we know that our competition pool is other gaming shows or other gaming entities, we kind of know who our competition pool is. But if it's including professional sports athletes, if it's including traditional celebrities.
I think that's a bit disingenuous because HyperX is not Alienware Dell, right? Alienware Dell may have the money and the budget to just do both and be perfectly fine with it. But in the context of HyperX, I get what you're saying, but this is not somebody who's just coming out of nowhere. This is somebody involved in these communities.
But like previous to this, it wouldn't have made sense if you had gotten Wilford Brimley to, sponsor a goddamn HyperX commercial.
But if Wilford Brimley was at Evo every fucking year, it would.
But you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. Previous to this, you didn't have celebrities showing up at things like Evo or League of Legends Worlds or the International, right?
Fair.
And you still kind of don't, right? Like, we're not there yet. We're not quite at the point where you're at a tournament and they have a camera pan to the audience and you see Drake sitting.
We're not seeing Drake front row at the OWL arena.
Right. Like, we're not quite there yet.
Maybe cool. At a Fortnite tournament, though.
Right? Like, I'm not saying that we're not headed there, but when was the last time that you saw Juju Smith-Schuster even mentioned in an esports presentation, right? Like, this is something that may have gone to maybe not like first string but a second stringer. Like, there are opportunities that because they went with Juju Smith-Schuster and because he has a higher price tag that
took that opportunity away from either you know, an esports pro or a streamer or an influencer, et cetera, et cetera.
Maybe, but if I'm looking at this from HyperX's perspective, you know, Joe, you mentioned on the show that Schuster's Twitter has what 700,000 followers, right?
Yeah, and Instagram's
a million
over
plus.
Okay, and yes, obviously he does have a foot in the in sort of like the gaming culture, right? But he obviously has a lot of fans outside of gaming culture.
You can use headphones anywhere.
But exactly. But they're still gamers. There are people out there who may not consider themselves the, of the gamer identity, but they still game. And if they see him wearing HyperX gear, just like if they saw him wearing the newest Jordans or something, they're going to go in and buy it because he's using it.
I tend to agree with Nate, actually. I think that there is definitely an element of as more mainstream people come into gaming, you are going to see opportunities that might have gone to someone else go towards them. But I think that's the price of doing business.
Yeah.
No, I think there has to be a little bit of it as esports moves into the mainstream.
Yeah. It's just natural. It's going
to
happen.
Right. But I mean, how much would it suck if we, you know, got to the point where, you know, it's the same, you know, we're seeing the exact same people, you know, on a reality show that we are competing in esports, and they didn't come from esports.
But we're not, but nobody says that when a celebrity gets a, you know, a shoe deal with Adidas, right? We're just talking about Drake. Drake has a shoe deal with Adidas.
Right.
Drake has not professionally played a lick of not a fucking sport anywhere ever, but he has a shoe deal with one of the biggest athletic gear providers on the face of the earth. We're not saying that when it comes to them, because we know Adidas can provide all the shit that they can for athletes, sponsor multiple athletes, and sponsor Drake as well. If we get to a point to where, if HyperX is to a point to where they say, you know what, we can continue to sponsor Daigo and other players that that they currently sponsor, and on top of that, we could bring in Juju Smith-Schuster, what is the problem with
and
that?
And it is worth noting that they are sponsors for tons of endemic esports athletes and brands. Like, right. We're not saying that they're not.
Right. But don't we want to see future celebrities come from the esports world, right? Like, how awesome would it be if, you know, Ninja delivered an Emmy? You know what I mean? Like, or presented an Emmy or whatever, you know?
But that's go ahead.
What we're also seeing, and we alluded to this on the show, actually, Nate, you did, is that as esports are becoming more accepted in the mainstream, people who have been sports or video game fans or esports fans are just allowed to show that side of them now.
That's true.
So, like, someone like Juju Smith-Schuster, he didn't get into esports because he said, oh, wow, that's pretty lucrative. Let's take a look at that.
That's a very good point.
No, he just was a big video game fan, and that can be part of who he is in the modern NFL.
Sure. And I don't want to begrudge him that. It's just, you know, he's making a lot of money
six figures
off of that interest that he doesn't do full time.
Yeah, and but tell me, does a promotion between somebody like Hook Gang God, who you don't even know what the fuck he looks like, Nate, between and Juju Smith-Schuster, who you have more context for, what is the more effective campaign from a business standpoint?
Oh, no, I totally understand
and
that.
And the problem is not what HyperX, it's not with Juju, it's not with the NFL, it's with esports, because they don't have the star power and the big personalities. Once that begins to happen, you will see sponsorships
go towards those people. That's entirely fair, because esports in terms of a mainstream attraction has really only been mainstream for, if you really really want to try to be liberal with it, 3 years.
Sure.
At most.
No,
We haven't had time to cultivate talent like the NFL can cultivate talent.
But that has nothing to do with talent. We're talking about people who are big personalities. Those people are bringing those personalities
with them. We have an ass load of them. They're called streamers. They're all over Twitch. That's why millions of people watch Twitch all the time.
The other half of that, though, is you're going to start seeing shows like Fallon or Colbert. They're eventually going to look at esports and go like, wait a minute, a lot of people are watching this shit. Conan O'Brien fails at video games and people tune in by the millions to watch it.
But
you're going to see people who are popular in esports start appearing as guests on the show, and that's where they will start to become mainstream, and you will see that crossover start to reciprocate a little bit.
Yeah, and then 10 years down the line, someone will replace one of those dudes, and they have a direct context for esports, and then it's totally part of their, you know, of their, it's like a worked-in part of their whole content.
It comes down to the fact that we, as you very adequately put it, this has been in the mainstream for a couple years. it's just the beginning.
It'll
and that's
here.
Where we're at, and that we have to see this continue to grow. I understand the concern. Totally.
I don't want to see our fledgling talent get usurped by already existing incumbent celebrity.
And I think we won't as long as the fact that, you know what, Juju Smith-Schuster can do whatever he wants, and sure, he may get $100,000 from HyperX to hawk some stuff, but, I mean,
he still has to play football for half the year.
Well, he has to play football for half the year, and he's never going to be competing at Fortnite while he's doing that.
That's true. We also talk about the latest in gaming news, as well as some new news on Project Ragtag.
It sucks.
It's gone. It's not new news, but it's just gone.
It's like tangential news. It's not even news about Ragtag. So
it's just been shelved.
Yeah, Amy Hennig is starting her own new studio. Which I'm excited but a little bit trepidatious for. Being a big fan of Amy Hennig, I hope that she finds really talented people to work with her, and that I hope that they find some really good investment.
I hope
I hope that they get the money that they need to be able to make the vision that she can come up with.
And understanding scope, right?
Yes.
Because that's what it's about. Like,
well, I mean,
if you're going to be a small studio,
right,
be a small studio.
But I mean, she's coming from series like Legacy of Kain and Uncharted.
The biggest studios that
Which is fine.
That's going to be tough. That's going to be a big adjustment for her.
For people like us. But the average person will look at whatever the name of her studio is, not know that she's a part of it, and not care what she did in the past because they don't know that she's from it. If you go like, if you start billing your game as from the creator of Legacy of Kain, from the creator of Jak and Daxter, all right, you're putting some expectations on yourself.
Well, but at the same time, you know, remember, there have been a lot of games recently that had smaller development that when it comes out were, you know, AAA-ish in look. Look at Hellblade, the newest Sacrifice. That was an indie studio, right?
Yep, right.
Not anymore.
Amazing.
Not now.
Well, it only takes one game, too.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's fair.
That wasn't their only game. They did have another one before that. Anyway, so we also talk about Google entering into the gaming space, which I think is definitely really interesting.
The Google era is over.
I just...
Who would buy a Google console?
I don't see this working out very well for them unless there is a major shift towards, like, mobile and or unifying hardware.
But here's the thing is we have talked about where the hell would another console generation go. Google might be able to make an inroads on innovation in a console.
Yep.
Really?
They're the only ones who can.
With what, though? Like, what piece of technology?
They have an in-house hardware company in HTC, and they already have partnerships with, I think, something like 80% of all of the microchip manufacturers
but what are
on
they gonna
Earth,
do, what
not
are they,
in China.
But what are they what doing about? Differently? What are they doing to... Because that's... Like, when we talk about the way forward for the gaming industry, we're not just talking about more pixels, better graphics,
right,
better frame rate.
Gone are those days.
We're talking... Because we're at the mat. Like, I feel like we're... You can't push it much farther.
No, it's got to be something innovative and new.
Exactly, right? Like, you can't...
So we talk about unified hardware.
I mean, exactly. That's the only thing that I could see Google having a leg up on the competition on.
A major leg up.
Absolutely. But that's only if we shift in that direction. That's only if the rest of the gaming industry has that same desire.
But there's about three companies on Earth who can make massive shifts in tech like that. One of them is Apple. The other one is Google. The other one...
Tencent. I mean, seriously, like... Or Alibaba. Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. There are not... And that's what I thought was very interesting about the story, is there are not very many companies that I would even take seriously. Almost any other company, if they said we're getting into the video game industry...
We'd laugh at
them. This would have been a news segment.
Yeah.
But because it's Google... We have to at least take it seriously.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Have the discussion.
That's true. I mean, if anyone can do it, I think Google can.
Yeah.
It's just given Microsoft's track record, I don't know that this is the smartest. I don't think that they're going to see returns in 10 years. This has got to be a 20-year track for them, right? Like,
I could see that.
It's going to be a struggle for them for the first 10 years. And I mean, a real struggle.
I don't know if I'll say 10 years, but I will say their first console.
Unless they do something like actually cannibalize
Microsoft. It's going to be rougher than the original Xbox, and that was about as rough as I've seen a console launch go.
I don't think it would be.
You don't think so?
Nah.
Why?
So I got more resources.
Dude, look, the Steam box got
trounced. Nobody bought that shit.
That was a horrible idea, though.
No, it was a bad idea. They have more resources. And looking at those previous forays into gaming, even their own, I think they sit back and they say, okay, what do we have the advantage over everybody else? Okay, we can make Unify hardware. Cool. What can we do around that? It may not even be a console that is akin to anything that we're ever used to ever. It could be something that is completely so different from the traditional three manufacturers. You may have to have more than one. Well, you may have to have both of them.
And here's the thing. Much like what the Xbox, the first Xbox did, you're right. It didn't by any means trounce the PS2 or the Wii or the GameCube, whatever the hell was out at that time. It didn't do that. But what it did is it bought them enough of a foothold
to make
in the market to make the 360, which is where they launched from. Now, of course, we all know the Xbox One kind of petered out. Is that because no one can hold a candle to Sony and Nintendo? Probably not. I think maybe Microsoft just made some real shit decisions around that time. And, I mean, E3, what was it, 2013 happened. That was not good for them.
But again, okay, so let's say it's 2020, right?
Right.
And, you know, you've got the PlayStation 5 on the horizon.
Yep.
Xbox is still sitting around with its thumb up its butt.
Probably
released two new consoles in that span of time. And then you've got Nintendo, who's still riding the tail end of the Switch.
Yeah, they're coming. Probably going to the later after.
Let's say the Google box, the Google console,
whatever it is,
drops 2020. Why should I dump my PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 5 that I'm considering for a Google box?
But that's the thing. Maybe this is something that they're not even asking that of you. Maybe they're saying, don't come in and buy our console over somebody else's
console.
But what our console can do, none of the rest of those can do. So you can have both of them.
Then what you're talking about is having a price point compelling enough that it doesn't even put it into the same league as other consoles.
Which I think they could do.
When's the last time you actually paid for a phone?
That's possible.
Exactly. They already subsidize the vast majority of their product.
That's true. A lot of phones are subsidized. But if you don't subsidize your phone through signing up for a plan,
crazy expensive.
Oh my gosh. It's like $1,000 to $1,200.
But what if the next generation of Androids comes out and the console's included with it? What if the console is part of your phone plan at some point?
Mm. Your data.
That's
usage.
Something that could happen.
Yeah. Mm. Or your membership to wherever their streaming service is.
Mm. Oh God.
Instead of paying $10 a month, you pay $35 a month, and majority of that fee is going to paying off your console.
But is that not just the same promise that Sony made with the Vita, where you're having the experience on your TV, you leave and you take it with you on your Vita, right? Like, sure. That's kind of the same. That's the same selling point, at least.
Right, right? But we're talking about a decade of hardware events.
No. I understand that part, but in terms of a selling point, in terms of a consumptive pattern, you're talking about taking a game that you're playing on your TV and then taking it with you when you leave, right? Like having hardware that can utilize both of those things, which is in some respects the same selling point as the Switch. I'm not going to say that it doesn't have a compelling selling point, but with Sony not able to make the case and Nintendo really only recently being able to make the case, I still don't see that as a leg up
But that's not the selling point.
I know we're low on time, but here's what I'm seeing, right? That they talk about a Netflix streaming service for game. We talk about cloud gaming, that is.
Yep.
So, okay, their cloud gaming service comes out and says, all right, great. It's $35 a month or, you know, whatever it is. I think how much, you know, they charge for a phone a month or whatever. Great, that's what it is, and the console comes with it.
That's what I'm saying.
That's how we move
our
consoles.
That's the selling point. If you tell me I could go to Best Buy and walk out with that console ostensibly for free, but pay $35
but I signed a contract.
But I signed a contract for 2 years and pay $35 a month, do you know how many people are going to buy that shit?
No money down on the console?
Okay.
And I could play the same shit that you're playing for your $600 console?
That's not bad. I mean, that's fairly appealing right there. I don't think that $35 a month
would
be able
higher.
To get
you're right. It'd be higher.
That's arbitrary ass number.
Yeah. I think it would be closer to 50. But depending on how many
but it's Google. Like they can bundle in your TV
but if you
streaming
play two
with
games,
that.
That
oh my god.
For
yeah. Like if that included like a year's worth of the YouTube streaming package where you can watch live live
think
television.
Google. Think
bundle.
Of how many properties they
YouTube,
own. They could put in with that.
YouTube Red. Oh yeah. No, actually, that's actually not a terrible point there.
I mean, I could see people using that as a media resource, even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Google's got opportunity is what there I'm trying is. To say. And that's why we say you have to take it seriously. You Absolutely. Can't just laugh it off.
But yep, the Atari no. box.
You're totally right.
It's hot as balls.
It is. Really is. We talk about the international aspect of esports. Is it appealing as the regional competition aspect for esports? Being that the regional competition is much more recent, I think that we have very limited data in terms of the overall appeal of international events. And not just that, I think that a comparison between, you know, things like the OWL World Cup and the actual World Cup, you can't really compare the two, because with the Olympics and the World Cup, that happens once every 4 years. You know, you don't have the opportunity. Esports international events happen every single year. And so
every single week sometimes.
Yeah, like,
exactly. All the time.
It doesn't seem like anything special. So I think maybe right now, in terms of this first year of NALCS being franchised, yeah. as well as OWL, mm-hmm. that there's a greater spotlight and a greater emphasis on that this go round, but that it's going to take a couple of years to kind of really suss out whether or not people are more enthusiastic about the international aspect or the regional aspect of esports. And of course, we wrap up today talking about our social media segment, asking you guys if you have a developer that you consider yourself loyal to and if they ever burned you. That was a really fun segment. Thank you for your responses. Check PT Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you want to get in on those. Again, thank you for all of your awesome responses. It was so much fun to read those. It is always fun to have a social media segment each week. So we want to encourage you guys to continue to respond to each of those that gets posted by Robbie every week. So thank you, Robbie.
Actually, our producer, Christine, has been helping me with that.
Oh, good.
Recently,
well, so thank you. Yes, thank you, Christine. But that's going to be it for the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today for the Checkpoint podcast. CheckpointRadio.com is where you can find out more info about the show, as well as full episodes on demand posted every Tuesdays, interviews from past shows, and much, much more. That's all over at CheckpointRadio.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. That's CheckPT Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review. Checkpoint Radio is a production of Westwood One. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Big thanks to our producers, Rick Scott, Kevin Graham, and Christine Corpus. For the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, I'm Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, tune into our weekly radio show. For more information and the latest on esports and gaming, go to checkpointradio.com.